Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, just like our podcast network, LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Buddy, I think we can sum the show up pretty quickly here today. Give us the beats.
James the Beard Harden. But also, man, I'm going to hop on with Jake Madison from the Locked On Pelicans podcast so we can talk about that other trade target rumored to be heading to Brooklyn in Drew Holiday and where we stand on the line of suitors that can put together a package to entice the Pelicans to send a two-way player like Drew over to the East Coast.
It was an eventful Saturday night for your boys, for the Twittersphere, for everything Nets. We are coming at you almost like emergency style on this James Harden news. Let's get started.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network, your premium source for everything you need to know about your Brooklyn Nets. I'm Doug Norrie, lead analyst and owner at DFSR for all your basketball and betting needs. And over there is Adam Armbrecht. You know him. He's the voice of the Nets on Sportscast. They're also doing a ton of other NFL and NBA analyst stuff. The Lord's work, as we say, over on Sportscaster. Buddy, how's it going?
Howdy, friends. I'm doing well. I'm still working on the transition of my normal response, plus actually answering the question you directed at me. So here we go.
Well, the good thing about podcasting is that you just switch it up on the other guys. Let's just leave them sort of like on their back heels for the beginning. That's good podcasting and radio, right? Like not have the other person know what's coming next so they can just react in real time. I think that's like kind of how, what they teach you in broadcasting school that I never went to.
Just kind of just whip it out there and see if anybody picks it up. That's kind of how we want to do things. Yeah,
it's like Michael Scott doing improv. It's like, oh god, put all your guns down. Okay, we are jumping on this podcast, excited to do this one because every time there's like some kind of curse because every time we say we're going to do draft coverage, something else comes along into the Nets land in terms of news that feels like it's not more important to talk about than the draft, but this one definitely ranks up there. So Saturday night, here's how you ruin a Saturday night for one Mr. Doug Norrie. You schedule something to do with your family and maybe a couple friends. Like it was like a Zoom thing we were doing. And then 1 hour before that, Farbad Esnachari, who is a he's not a Woj and he's not a Shams, but he's a reporter that covers the Clippers and he works for Sports Illustrated as well. A dialed in guy, but definitely not the Sham and Woj bomb nature. He's more just like sort of just like general reporting and stuff like that. He throws out there, I mean, with no apologies and no precursor, just says a source is, I'm just going to read the tweet. A source is telling me that the Nets have engaged in talks with the Rockets. Okay, so all of a sudden I'm worried about this 8 o'clock call that I have to go to. that this is going to be ruined. And then the next line totally submarines it. James Harden for a variation of Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, Taurean Prince, and Jared Allen. Nothing finalized, but Harden to Nets seems like a real possibility. If finalized, announced on November 22nd. So that would be a week from Sunday. So that's the first tweet. Then he follows it up with, mind you, I never do these things. This is what I'm hearing right now through good intel, but we'll see what the future holds. So he kind of hedges his bets a little bit on the second part.
I like that. I'm putting all my money on black. You know what, though? Let me just put 25% on red, though, just in case, just to be safe.
Well, this is like, this is the part where, because, you know, if you like, Aria Abraham is a guy that comes up in things like this, where last year with the Kawhi and where Kawhi's going, he's a Lakers guy and he's just tweeting and he kind of he becomes infamous for saying he has good sources around this. And then the exact opposite thing happens. So there's real fear about tweeting stuff like this or reporting it because it can really backfire on you in a bad way. And so, but the Farbod actually was one of the first guys on the Kawhi to the Clippers thing a year ago. So this is a guy that I would say chooses his spots accordingly. And so this to me doesn't end up being this becomes more than just a, hey, some random account wants to get some retweets here on a Saturday night. You know what I mean?
Right, he doesn't need this. He doesn't need the notoriety.
Well, what he actually doesn't need is it to go wrong.
Exactly.
Because,
right, even worse.
Like, there's actually way more risk for it to go wrong than to go right because this thing, you know, 5,000 likes and 2,000 retweets later, you know, he doesn't have a massive following, but that represents probably one of the bigger tweets he's sent out ever. So we're going to get into what this means, but I'm just trying to lay the groundwork for there's probably a little fire underneath this smoke, right? This makes me feel like while maybe the trade is not imminent, I think this at least speaks to this conversation has happened. So we'll get to the reactions in a second. I want to get you were off Twitter mostly this Saturday night. I kind of texted you I screenshotted this and sent it to you, and I sent it to basically every single person I know that likes basketball because I wanted to gin up some conversation in text, and then I took to Twitter, and I'll get to some of that in a second. But what's your initial reaction when you see that this is at least a possibility, if unlikely, but it's 100% worth talking about because this would represent, ground-shifting news.
Right. After the brief pause because we've had so many discussions around what pieces need to go away from, who's good enough on this roster, do you feel confident in Caris LeVert, whatever, you know, as constituted. And then you try to wrap your head around the idea of James Harden specifically. And after a beat, I remembered, oh, right, you have D'Antoni on the coaching staff. Like, if you need a reference point, if the organization needs a reference point on this guy, and not that you do, he's pretty well established. Jim has done good work in the league so far in his career. But now you have a guy who has familiarity with him, understands probably pretty well how he would mesh with Kevin Durant, with Kyrie Irving. So from the legitimacy standpoint and knowing what how it would all work together, you have that extra piece to lean back on in D'Antoni. And obviously Nash is going to be listening to him, and maybe Sean Marks is taking some of his advice, or at least having the conversations as well. So it lines up from that standpoint. I guess I had these conversations with Matt Brooks during the week where I thought, what did I say to you last time? Like, there's a greediness around the fan base now. Like, that you got Kyrie, you got KD, and they're like, and now give me another enormous superstar in the league, because it's not enough until we have every single star in the league. And I'll be curious to see what your take is on it, because this also feels like, were this to go in the direction of Harden to Brooklyn, then I think, obviously, all these pieces, the variations, but then there's another domino that can fall too that has been rumored around Kevin Durant and a player that he's been reaching out with from his days back in OKC as well. So this could be an entirely different starting five, essentially. It could be all vets, all over 30. This could be the old school squad going for championships, and I am both excited about the prospect of it and a little bit bummed out, because you know where I come from as a Nets fan and just liking some of the young talent, right? And this could have implications across the roster, by the way, that we can get into here, beyond just some of the names that people be happy to jettison, whether it's a Taurean Prince in a big contract or a Spencer Dinwiddie, a guy who's most likely going to be gone anyway. But there's other names here on this roster that you may not see back, specifically if you make a move like this for Harden in that big contract.
Yeah, I mean, okay, there's a lot to unpack there. There's.
I figured if I just whipped out 33 points and then you could kind of round.
Yeah, yeah, no, but that's just the nature of this, right? I didn't say like ground shifting or, you know, something like this represents seismic change. There's no doubt about it. And this is coming from the guy, who's from me, by the way. Sometimes you say coming from the guy, and sometimes you can't tell if I'm talking about you or me, or someone else, but that had said this Nets roster is built perfectly to enter this kind of regular season. So I'm totally aware of that. That was more in reference to some other, you know, sort of secondary trades that we were talking about. This to me is not comparable to anything we've talked about before. I'm going to get to all my thoughts. I'm going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Okay, so a couple things. One, I was surprised to see a somewhat mixed reaction about this from Twitter. And I'm not, by the way, I'm not gauging. I'm probably going to do a bad job here gauging Nets fans' reactions and lumping them all into the same basket and not dividing them out between people whose opinion I really respect and then those who I don't, although you're going to see which boxes each person fits into very quickly here. So my initial reaction was, just on its face, you do this deal 10 times out of 10, and you don't even think twice about it.
Right.
And I feel like this means something, because I was like, let's see about Jrue Holiday, even Bradley Beal. Like, these are the deals where I'm like, maybe I don't see it. It doesn't really fit in for me. Harden represents a next level of player that those other guys do not fit into. So let's just start there. This is not Bradley Beal, and this is not Jrue Holiday. This is a top 10 NBA player. No doubt about it. Top 10 NBA player. If you at me, if you want to make the list to put other 10 other guys ahead of him, we can talk about it all day. That right away is, you always, the group of these guys is so small that you always work to get them and you'd worry less about what it took to get them right. later, right? Like, and so from just a quick, you know, out of my pocket, you know, quick trigger reaction, I'm like, oh my God, you do this. I didn't even look at the other names. I just saw the James Harden, and I was like, well, they're not going to trade Kyrie or KD for him. So the other right. names, I just kind of blurted it out. Like, I just didn't, I went back and revisited it later. So from that standpoint, to me, it's a no-brainer. The second thing is, you know, I'm just going to kind of parrot some of the people's concern. People are concerned about fit. Okay, fit in the current NBA is something that you can just kind of make happen. I don't know another way to tell people this. Like, good coaching, you can put, I mean, short of like putting five Joel Embiids because like you just don't have someone to put on, dribble up the court, or five Steph Currys because you get killed at the rim, right? Like, I mean, one guy you could say is a five LeBrons probably wins. But the in general, after that, fit can be sort of molded to what is best suited for once you see how everyone's right. on the court. And consolidating power around the top does make a lot of sense when the group of guys is the elite group, right? We just came off a season seeing that with with the LeBron and AD and basically spare parts. And they won the national, like it was a college, they won the championship. So
they won the national title. They went back to college.
I'm
all
over the place. Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, they killed Kentucky. It was like kind of brutal.
They're playing against kids.
So I'm not worried about the fit piece even a little bit. I mean, maybe I'll be worried come halfway through the season if it's not working, but it's not something you worry about to start. Because it's not right. like a, it's not the lay fans job to worry about fit when it comes to superstars. You want to worry about fit because you're like, I don't know if Jeremy Grant can like shoot the three well enough to play in this offense. You're like, okay, that's different, right? Like, you don't worry about fit when it comes to superstars. Does that, I'll go point by point here. Does that clear out some of like the concern if you had any of that part of it?
Yes, because I you know, especially when you hear the way things are talked about in Houston and where Harden and even Westbrook are in the state of that franchise, and that's why all these conversations start to happen. The concern that comes up, and I'm not saying it's what you have now, the concern that will come up about, oh, who's going to get the ball when and how are you going to manage, right? You guys want to be on the ball and who needs their touches and who's taking shots. Great. That's the concern that, like, to your point, I think about 20 games into the season when I'm seeing what's happening on the court. I don't worry about it when they say, do you want James Harden?
Okay, right. So, and then, so then I'll go to the next piece, which is, you know, I talked about how this Nets team was built perfectly for a regular season because of depth around scoring and just being able to like give KD and Kyrie guys like that nights off. By the way, James Harden, he'd be like a combination of Spencer Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert in that respect. And so, and I'm overstating it to some degree, but because he's clearly not. But adding James Harden to your team as a guy who can basically like carry a team for a night. Well, okay, we've seen this guy carry his team for multiple seasons with, mm-hmm. I mean, I know he had Chris Paul and he had the corpse of Westbrook, but after that, the team like really had almost nothing. And he's got them deep into the playoffs with great regular seasons every year. So that part, that cures my concern over that part because we've seen him already do it. And there's just no worry about that part of it, right? So like that part is taken care of as well. And then, you know, the third part is what does the rest of the team look like when you've consolidated all of your cap space around three guys? That's probably the biggest risk because if something were to happen to one of the guys, you are specifically, I mean, really only KD, like I would say, but KD would be the biggest risk of people to lose, clearly. And then at that point, though, you were probably screwed even with the old team anyway. So, like, you know what I mean? Like if KD goes down in the old team's construction, it's not a championship caliber team anyway. So, you really can't live your life on worrying about that risk. And so, at that point, you know, what are you dealing with in the rest of the roster? It would look not great behind those guys for sure. But look at the look at the Lakers last year. It's LeBron, it's AD, and then JaVale McGee.
Some dudes okay. I know.
Danny Green. Markieff Morris is closing games for this team. Alex Caruso right. is closing. They're nice stories. Like, they're nice feel-good kind of stories, but Markieff Morris was a buyout guy. Caruso didn't play all year, right? Like, this is yeah. – Danny Green was could barely shoot and played good defense. Like, it's not like these guys were playing with this treasure trove of bench guys that they were able to just keep slotting in. They relied on the two guys. And they made do with what was left. This works under the same premise.
Well, and so a couple of things. yes, obviously, maybe the bigger concern is obviously Kevin Durant just seeing him be healthy. All the indications are, by the way, like players have been coming out talking about him out on the West Coast working out where he's just destroying dudes and looks better than he did before the injury. Take it for what it's worth. It's exciting to at least hear that. But I actually think, too, that so potentially a James Harden move would then also mitigate the injury risk around Kyrie Irving. So as much as to your point, you may be more concerned about KD's health coming off of that injury. But we also know that Kyrie picks up nagging injuries, is going to miss 20 games here, 20 games there. And we've talked about in the Spencer Dinwiddie vein of, hey, here's a guy that can carry the scoring load, etc. But we also know that James Harden can carry the scoring load consistently every single game for 82 games if you needed him to do that. So that's a big upside there as well when you talk about bringing him into the roster. And then, see, now here's the piece, and you tell me if you don't want to get into this just yet, but the piece around the rest of the roster. So the one element, and I mentioned it at the top there, was Kevin Durant having conversations, allegedly, these rumors, with trying to attract Serge Ibaka on the MLE to the Brooklyn Nets. So now you're talking about bringing him in as another piece. So that's obviously going to add some depth,
you know,
and change.
Let's stop. Yeah. Let's curb that one for 1 second, only because I think that's going to take us down another road. And I think the other road that I do want to walk down is if the trade goes through, what the rest of the roster looks like. Because I think I'm gonna sum it. And I hate to cut you off on it, only because there's another point I want to make about Harden just along the previous thing. I will say a team like this becomes a lot more attractive to ring chasers. When it's headed down to it, I don't know if Serge fits into that, but obviously between the Harden and Durant thing, there would clearly be a relationship. So that's definitely there. But we've seen time and time again, as guys sort of head out to pasture on their careers, the idea of getting a ring comes at the expense of needing to get paid for it, right? So right. I think the Nets are already a decently attractive market for that. I think this would make it more attractive while also opening up roster space to have it happen.
Okay, so pause on the roster side of it. On the James Harden piece, I'll throw this out there as well. We've talked about the Jrue Holidays of the world, and one of the things that we keep going back to is, like, how do you get better defensively alongside of Kyrie? I'll just put this out there, too. We all know that James Harden is incredibly elite on the offensive end. He's also a plus defender. Like, he's a better, by rating standards, by all metrics, he's a better defender than Kyrie, than Caris LeVert, and Spencer Dinwiddie.
Yeah, so that's a funny one. A funny one because if the effort is there, he's
100%.
It's an effort thing for him for a long time. Like, there was videos that went around of his lack of defensive effort, like from 2 or 3 years, basically 3 years ago, that were just, I mean, they're comical. If you go to YouTube and just like type in James Harden defense and make sure it's dated sometime around 2017 or 18, it's laughably bad. He has improved on that end to be like serviceable. He's actually not too bad in the post either, but he's definitely a strong dude. He's not like a great defender by any means. He's serviceable when the effort is there. Is that a fair? You're getting at?
Oh, by the way, 100%. So let's qualify this statement by saying I'm not telling you, hey, this is like having Jrue Holiday on the defensive end and James Harden on the offensive end.
No, sure, you said it. I just wanted to crystallize it. I know I wasn't disagreeing with you. I know you said that part of it.
And in the mid and by the way, like for guys like Spencer Dinwiddie or Caris LeVert, let's say Caris LeVert more specifically, because he's the guy that everyone is really talking about. Oh, could he be the third star for the Brooklyn Nets? Listen, he has the length on the defensive end, but so far in his career, you haven't necessarily seen that it's anything more than a high effort guy who at times can have an impact on the defensive end. So just in that regard, listen, do you need to get the best out of Harden on that end of the court in order to see the value? Of course you do. But it is nice to know that if you're going to bring a guy in who's been competing out West and hasn't been able to get over the hump and get to championships, if you're bringing him into a roster with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, guess what? It's probably the best scenario to get the most out of him on the defensive end of the floor is when you have guys that are saying, hey, look what we're here to do. We can win maybe back-to-back championships if you're on this roster and you're willing to ratchet it up on the defensive end, especially when it comes to play. Like, you can do whatever you want during the regular season. Just show me that you're capable of your best effort in the playoffs, and that's going to move the needle for us.
One more thing about fit. Well, this is the best tweet I saw about this. It's from Bobby Skinner. He works for John Boy. This tweet should have way more likes than it does. But he said, super teams have been happening in the NBA for 10 years now, and people are still saying there's only one ball, right, in quotes. Yeah, the reference to, you know, the ball, you know, people each want to get fed when it comes to offense. He goes on to say, "We know, and the ball goes in the one ball goes in the one hoop a lot more when you've got more of the best players." So I thought that was, well, I thought that was the most concrete and succinct way to sum this whole thing up. It's like, right, duh. Like, this isn't rocket science. If you have all the best guys, you just score more. I don't know what people are worried about.
Well, and by the way, so I was starting to do this exercise around this roster with Kevin Durant coming back and just, you know, how many shot availability and trying to allocate it to the roster as it's currently constituted, just as an exercise of, well, I found it interesting. I'm sure a lot of people wouldn't. I like numbers and minutia. But when you talk about it, somewhere in the range of 100 to 110 possessions per game. That's the league average for teams. So when you start breaking it down and you talk about Kevin Durant gets 20 and Kyrie Irving's going to need his 20 and James Harden can take his 20, you still got, you know, you can still sprinkle around 5 to 7 shots for a lot of other guys on this roster. So maybe, you know, it supplements that point to, like you said, yeah, guess what? They get fed because there's still enough possessions for three superstar guys that love to shoot the ball to get all of their looks and not impact any either of those three players. All still get theirs. And some of the other guys, like your sharpshooters on the wings or some of those easy looks around the basket for the Allens and DeAndre Jordans of the world, those things still function inside of those numbers as well.
All right, let's look at what a potential trade could look like. Our boy, Billy Reinhart. I got to have this guy on. I'm just going to message him today maybe just to talk about it, because this guy, no one does a better job of just whizzing around the trade machines to make sure that they can kind of whip up something good. And he's one of the few guys I've seen that actually does whip up things that are good. This isn't the clickbaity kind of stuff, right, that is meant to just totally, you know, rile up fan bases so they can get some shares or whatnot. But Billy actually spent some time really, really thinking about this. So this is what he proposes as a trade that would work under both the money piece and compensatory pieces around, you got to give the Rockets a lot here, yeah, right? Like, this is, and actually it's funny about the Rockets. It's weird to think about trading James Harden, but on the back of the Russ stuff and Chris Paul and all this other stuff that's happened with them, they are, and just what Daryl Morey's done for years is, like, I'm pretty sure their draft capital is like zero. Like, they're staring down a future of without Harden that looks a lot, it looks pretty grim, because they've really mortgaged a lot of the future to deal with the present, and they almost got over the mountaintop, but they just didn't, and that happens, and I respect the effort. But Morey left and left them with very little left in the cupboard after Harden. And I'm, by the way, I'm not putting Russ in that category either in terms of getting stuff back. So, right, okay, I'm qualifying that by saying the number one thing that the Rockets can get back is some young guys, but they need draft picks. Okay, so here's Billy's proposed trade. Nets get James Harden. They also get PJ Tucker. Absolutely love this part of the trade. If they were able to get Tucker, because that cures a lot of needs. And then they get back a 2022 round one pick that's probably heavily protected. Then the Rockets get back basically the entire Nets team. They get back Dinwiddie, Karis, Torreon, Jared Allen, and then I'm not even going to read them all, but it would end up being 5 picks.
Right.
So with one that has like limited protections on it. This to me would represent what I believe to be a win for both teams, and understanding that the Rockets have to look at the future and say, okay, one, are we going to have fans in the stands this season? Probably not really. So the draw is going to be weird to begin with. Mm. The West is loaded. We have to probably get something for Harden at some point, because otherwise the future looks so bleak when it comes to what they're going to be able to do. And I don't know. I mean, when you hear that, again, this is a whole new Nets team. I mean, they'd have to sign Joe Harris to make sure there's a guy that we kind of recognized, I guess, outside of some dudes that played in the bubble. But what do you think when you hear this trade? And does it, as a fan, does it make you feel weird that, like, now you're basically have admitted that you're rooting just for the laundry, right? there's no other semblance of anything that occurred 2 years ago, and really almost nothing that happened last year, that at this point it's the Nets uniform, it's Barclays, and that's, and maybe like Sean Marks, and that's like what you're rooting for, because beyond that it's not like a these are my guys kind of thing.
Well, and so just to supplement your point about Houston, they have outgoing their first and second round picks this year go to Denver and go to Sacramento respectively. And then in the following years, they still have their 2021 couple of picks there in the second round, by the way. No first round pick in next year's draft.
Well, this
either
is what I mean. So, they've mortgaged this. Yeah. They've leveraged the hilt on on draft. Like, they have nothing.
So, you know,
they
have
nothing.
So,
and, like, they could be easily, if Harden were to walk and they got nothing for him, they could be the worst team in the league for 5 years.
Right.
That's not an understatement. Maybe longer. Like, there's no clear path to a rebuild for this team.
And so on Houston's side of it, I'll say that, listen, getting, you know, any combination of those types of players, right, specifically around having a Caris LeVert in there and just saying like, hey, we got a guy, you know, we got a scorer, we got, you know, a couple of attractive pieces. I mean, what are they going to do out west with that specific roster over the next season or two? I don't know. But you can still be competitive and at least exciting. And more importantly, probably for them, is getting the assets back and knowing that you can continue to build in the coming seasons ahead. From a, again, I'll go to, you know, as a pure Nets fan, like, it stings a little bit, right, to see guys going out the door, to see guys that you built around. Now, I've said, and you've kind of massaged me in that direction over our time on our previous podcast and then coming over to Locked On, where as the last few seasons have gone by, I've looked at Caris LeVert and realized, hey, he's 26, going to be 27. It's not like he's a young star that you can build around over the next, you know, 5-6 years. You can say this will be our centerpiece. He's a little bit, he's entering his prime now, but also he's not a superstar player. And none of these other guys are. The Jared Allen one, that would sting too a little bit for me, just because he is so young still. And I think that when you look beyond this iteration of the Nets, whatever it turns out to be, it'd be nice to have a player like that. And also, there's been those rumors about what his contract's going to look like and Clinton Capella-sized numbers, and that could be a hard pill to swallow for the Nets, regardless of what the cap looks like and who you have on this roster. So there's some, you know, some landscape where that feels good. Getting out from under the Torian Prince contract feels really nice in this possible scenario as well. By the way,
Spencer's not going to pick up that player option next year, so he's gone.
No, like, exactly. Some of these guys are already going to be gone. Some guys I'd like to see gone, and some are, you know, and then there's, I guess specifically, it's the Allen and the Caris LeVert piece where you go, boy, I wouldn't hate seeing Caris LeVert with Kyrie Irving and with Kevin Durant, and also, again, I take James Harden over that, you know, 1,000 times out of 1,000.
Right.
That being said, so this is where it gets to the other interesting piece for me, though, and this is both on the roster, so it stings. I'll put it that way. It stings. It isn't going to be a team from a couple of years ago, but as you kept reiterating to me, this is what it was about, though, building up to a point where you become attractive enough place that superstars want to come here, and that's what they've done, and now you're talking about possibly winning back-to-back titles, especially if you can make a trade like this for James Harden.
Yeah, by the way, I don't want to gloss over the PJ Tucker piece either. Like, getting him back would be pretty unbelievably amazing. Like, that contract is absolutely awesome, and he's, like, exactly what you need. We don't need to spend much more time on that, but, like, I didn't want to just forget that in Billy's proposed trade, they get PJ Tucker, too, which would be, like, such an amazing, unbelievable impact upgrade on defense that it's almost hard to fathom that they'd be able to pull both out of it. So anyway, sorry, I didn't want to, I just make sure that part wasn't lost in the shuffle here.
Yeah, no, incredibly, incredibly important, because he does bring, like you said, defensive value and obviously you 100% understood commodity when you bring him to the roster too. So that's a nice little feather in the cap. Here's where we get to, though, and this extends beyond a name that's not listed in this group of players. It's not listed as a part of this trade package. If you crunch the numbers now, I guess what? Torian Prince is close to 15, 16 million. So is Caris LeVert. So you're already up to 32 there, depending on if you threw in Allen's a relatively low contract.
Dinwiddie's like 12. Back, I don't have it up in front of me, but
Dinwiddie's 12 though. So you're up over 40 at that point. But when you bring back in PJ Tucker, that's going to cost you 8-9 million. So the problem, quote unquote, and we just talked about this, is when it comes to a guy like Joe Harris, we've mentioned just where is Joseph Tsai willing to go into the luxury tax? As long as that range, and I'm not saying that this is the deal breaker about making this choice, but just it'd be really nice if when you make this deal, you still have it in your mind of that room that we're willing to go to into the luxury tax to bring back Joe Harris, that's not getting impacted by anything that we do about bringing in a third star, bringing in James Harden, any of these players, because that's where my mind went immediately too with this trade is, think about Joe Harris, where it's literally like, hey man, you know what you got to do is just kind of stand there and wait for the ball to come to you. Because no one is ever, as much as they're going to want to, no one is ever going to be able to pay attention to Joe Harris on the perimeter the way you'd like to when you have Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden on the floor together. And for a guy who can get up a three-point shot in a phone booth, as we like to say, he's going to have wide open looks. So in terms of championship caliber and winning championships, keeping Joe Harris inside of it when you add James Harden would be monumental to moving the needle even deeper. And that, you know, the difference of what? Being in conference finals and going seven games and maybe getting to the finals versus definitely getting to the finals versus being in the finals versus winning the finals. I think Joe Harris is that kind of component to move the needle. So I would just love to see in this scenario that the money and the space is still afforded to keep Joe Harris on this roster.
Yeah, I'm less worried about that part of it, only because I'm like, again.
By the way, that's the pure fan of me going, just keep one of them. Keep one of the pieces. Keep one of the guys that you came in and, you know,
like I just have this sundae and then I just have cherries, but I have so many cherries on top that they're just spilling over the edge. It's kind of like what you're
saying. Yeah. splash the pot with a couple more cherries if you don't mind. If we're doing the dang thing, let's do the dang thing.
Yeah, the amount of cherries that are overflowing this sundae is just like, I mean, yeah, who cares that it costs $160 million? Like, look at all the cherries.
Yeah, that sundae was delicious.
Look, we're recording this Sunday. We jumped on this emergency style. I'm probably going to end up posting it Sunday too because I just want to have this up because I think this is. I think the trade moratorium ends Monday morning. So whether or not we end up doing because by the way, part of this trade that Billy, threw out there, I'm swallowing because I'm so excited here. The the trade he threw out would include the 2019 pick, which would mean the end of draft coverage for your boys here. But we're gonna see where
all
this
that
lands.
Hard work down the drain.
What's that?
I said all my hard work down the. Here's the other problem too. Just real quick, as we get out the door. Now I've also become kind of committed on some of these players in the draft that I'm excited about, and now I have to say, and I got to water those guys down a little bit. Listen, these prospects—they were really a dime a dozen in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I'd not for nothing because I've submarined some of the shows if you're going to listen to them, but I'd be happy to just talk James Harden on the Nets and how it fits, rather than you know if Desmond Bane's going to be a good fit in 3 years from now. So the okay. There's going to be a lot that comes out here. We recorded this Sunday morning. By the way, you might listen to this, and this news could be fully confirmed, or could be fully just with the blanket over and it's over. So, this is the state of NBA news at this point where we are. It's stuff changes very, very fast. But with the draft only a few days away and the draft capital looking to be really important now. It actually makes me wonder a little bit about how many other teams maybe saw this and they maybe just like ran to their phones to be like, hey, we also have a good pick in other guys. Like, are you interested in X, Y, and Z for this? If this is a real thing. So be interesting to see. We might be back sooner than later on the next podcast. Locked On Nets, you know that's the podcast. You got to subscribe, rate, and review it wherever you listen to podcasts. Five stars? I'm all over myself today. 5 stars or bust. Nothing less than the best is all we ask for. We'll be back again. At the worst case Tuesday morning, but if something else happens in the meantime, you know we're going to jump back on and give you everything you need to know.
And buddy, as one Whitney Elizabeth Houston would say, couldn't be more apt with some of the potential exiting players. Bittersweet memories, that's all I'm taking with me. Goodbye, please don't cry. We both know that I'm not what you need.
Ah, yes, all the great poets. All right, as promised, here comes Adam's interview with Jake Madison talking Drew Holiday, Pelicans, all the great trade stuff today.
All right, super stoked to get on here with Jake Madison of the Locked On Pelicans podcast because, as we know, a fellow brethren of the Locked On Network, the trade conversations are starting to stretch as far afield as you could possibly want to around the NBA, but there obviously has been some conversations or speculation around the Brooklyn Nets and the Pelicans making a deal around Drew Holiday. Just first of all, welcome in, man. Thank you for coming on and just having a little conversation with us.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me on. Always happy to talk some basketball.
So now, from the Pelicans' perspective, are you excited at the prospect of trading Holiday, regardless of where he goes? Does it make sense to you? Are you a little bit disappointed that you're losing that veteran leadership there? How does it feel internally from the Pelican side that you may be losing, essentially, I guess, the guy that's been the face of that franchise for a number of years?
Yeah, I hate all of you vultures trying to pry him away from the New Orleans Pelicans here, to be perfectly honest. But look, it makes sense. This is a very good player who's on a reasonable enough contract form that plays both ways, that is the type of guy that puts any team he would go to kind of over the top and put them into that championship contender stratosphere and tier of the NBA. Those players aren't always available. So to have one in Drew Holiday that isn't going to cost, you know, as much as an Anthony Davis or one of those type of players, he's a reasonable get for a number of teams. yeah, it makes sense that you at least need to kick the tires on trading him. I don't think New Orleans is trying to force him out of the door. There's a lot of mutual respect between him and the franchise going back a number of years now. But if the right offer comes along, yeah, you're going to move on from Jrue Holiday, particularly with a team that's younger than him. He's 30, 31, and the rest of the team's around 22 and under, kind of. So it makes sense that you might look to trade Jrue Holiday and align your timelines a little bit more with what you might get in return or draft picks.
And so now when these rumors start happening here, you look out there, obviously Brooklyn's been speculated, but there's been a handful of other teams as well. Even at one point, the Lakers got thrown into the mix. But when you start to think about teams like that and assets in return, what feels like the most desirable landing spot for Holiday in terms of what the Pelicans can get back in return, whether it's players that plug in nicely into that system there and complement what you have, or the assets that you know going forward, you can still look at the draft and try to continue to build around your core?
Yeah, it's more on the latter. I think what the Pelicans are looking to get back in a deal like this is no long-term salary. They want to keep flexibility going forward, particularly with Zion on a rookie deal. You're about to give Brandon Ingram a max contract to kill some of that flexibility, but you don't want to lose it all entirely. So no long-term money. I think they'd like a young player that could be good. Doesn't necessarily mean he has to turn into something great, not like a blue chip kind of trade prospect or anything like that. And they want picks. And I think they ideally want picks not in this draft. Mm-hmm. They already have 3 second-round picks, the 13th pick in this upcoming draft. I don't think they're looking to really add more to what's considered somewhat of a weaker draft. I think what they're looking for picks-wise, and this is probably good for all the teams that are looking to trade for Jrue Holiday, are picks way far out, 2024, 2025, 2026. Put those as far out as you can and maybe try and have those picks go beyond Jrue Holiday with the team that he would be going to, and maybe that team goes through a rebuilding phase and those picks look better. Look what they did with the Los Angeles Lakers in an Anthony Davis trade. Mm-hmm. They didn't want picks in the next couple of years because the Lakers were going to be good. You want to kick those down the road as far as possible, and I think the Pelicans are looking to do that. So some combination of young guy who could be good because you're going to need to include someone in there to make the salaries work, plus far out future first round picks are what they're hoping to get. And so all the teams that kind of come up, the Nets, the Miami Heat, and the Denver Nuggets kind of fit in those. I think those are the three most realistic trade partners for New Orleans. Anything the Lakers are going to have to include isn't good. And frankly, the Pelicans own the Lakers drafts for the next couple of years, so it doesn't really matter. So I think those teams who aren't going to have desirable first round picks right now might in a couple of years, and I think that's the type of thing that gets a deal done. I'm not as high on, say, the Denver Nuggets as I am on some of the other ones. I'd be a little bit more interested in what's coming back from, say, your Nets or the Miami Heat, I think, when looking at trade partners.
So then specifically Miami Heat, Brooklyn Nets, when you look at those rosters, I think obviously you'd be trying to get back a Tyler Hero from Miami in that deal potentially. And now that's a younger player, significantly younger than really anything you're going to get back from the Nets outside of a Jared Allen. But, you know, his ceiling or what his development is going to look like, I think, is still a little bit of a question mark as far as what he could be down the road. Does Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie, did these kind of names move the needle for the Pelicans in that regard? Now, and beyond that, obviously, you said the assets are the more important thing. So do you look at a Caris LeVert and say, hey, we can maybe stem the tide for a couple of years while we wait to get to those deeper down the road draft picks that we could get in return as well?
Yeah. Yeah. So I agree with a lot of what you said. So first and foremost, Tyler Hero's in a deal. I think the Nets are dead in the water, and they're right. I don't know if anything can be able to top it if Tyler Hero's included in a trade. The good news for the Nets is I don't think they're going to include Tyler Hero in a trade. At that point, how much of an upgrade does Jrue Holiday become to your team? Tyler Hero was pretty important for him this year. Jrue Holiday is a huge upgrade if you add him to that existing roster. But if you lose Tyler Hero to add Jrue Holiday to the team, yeah, you're probably still better. But at that point, it's a bit of a marginal upgrade and maybe not something you want to move heaven and earth to go and get. So I think it can help the Nets in that regard that they're not going to include him in there. I don't see the Denver Nuggets including Michael Porter Jr. in a deal too. And that makes a Nets trade where you're getting just some quality guys back a lot more appealing. The Pelicans do want to make the playoffs this year if they can. Mm-hmm. Getting a guy in Spencer Dinwiddie, getting a guy in Caris LeVert kind of is going to help push you towards that more so than probably some of the other players that you might get. I'm not all that high on Gary Harris. Give me those two guys instead. If it's right, including Kendrick Nunn in a deal from the Miami Heat, I'm not as certain about that one. And all of a sudden, you know, Caris LeVert, I think kind of maybe being the centerpiece of that, the right role for him, I think, makes him a very good player. If you're throwing him in with the starters, with Lonzo Ball, with Brandon Ingram, with Zion Williamson, I'm not as sold on that, but I can see him becoming a Manu Ginobili type player. There's a lot of similarities there, I think, as that six man off the bench that can kind of do it all. And if he accepts that kind of role, you always want a guy like that on your team.
Yeah, and very interesting, especially from a Nets perspective. You talk about guys that have developed over the last couple of years, have been starters playing significant roles for this team. And obviously, we're going through a shift here where all of a sudden those roles and identities are going to have to change if they're still going to be on this roster. We'll get you out the door here on this. With the speculation, however founded or rumored it may be, that Harden at the very least is going to be on the move, and the Brooklyn Nets are also being talked about as a landing spot for him, do the Pelicans worry at all about the impact of Harden being on the market? Because he's even been speculated about what would a package take from Miami to possibly send him there. What is Brooklyn going to look to do? Is there any worry that it diminishes the market for Holiday if you see a player like that come in? Obviously, two very different skill sets, but it seems like there is overlap in potential suitors for both of their services. Is there any risk there for the Pelicans to say, boy, we're not going to be able to get nearly as many assets back depending on what Harden goes for? Or is it we see what happens with Harden and it almost makes us bolster what we demand in return?
I think it's more of the former. I think it hurts the Pelicans market for Jrue Holiday. Harden's a way better player. Let's not pretend about this. I'm not even going to go that homerish on you here. He's an amazing player. And if you can get him for whatever price, it sets the market for every other guard that's going to be traded. And it's always going to be less than that. And that's going to significantly lower Jrue Holiday's value, I think, knowing that, Harden's worth this, Holiday's not worth that much. And at a certain point, it just becomes a value proposition for a lot of these teams. You don't want to overpay if you don't have to. And if his market really does tend to fall out, and I don't know if it will, I think the Pelicans might be comfortable keeping him. They'd be happy to keep him here for the rest of his career, I think, if the price is right in terms of a contract extension or a future contract. So I don't think they're necessarily, as I mentioned in the beginning, trying to force him out and be like, we got to get rid of Jrue Holiday. It's just, if the price is right, we'll trade him. But if the price is wrong, yeah, they'll keep him and try and make a run next year with him. They love him. He loves the organization. He loves the city. The veteran leadership that he brings is very, very valuable to a young team like this. So I think it does hurt his trade value if James Harden is out there. Unless the team gets desperate. Say Harden goes to Miami, does Boston get really desperate? Mm-hmm. And does Danny Ainge finally make a big move with all of those picks that he has that he's been linked to in every single time? It's Danny Ainge, I'd probably say no to that. But, at a certain point, it might make other teams in the East, if he goes that direction, a little bit more desperate. And maybe in some way that helps Jrue Holiday's trade value. But I don't really see it going that way.
All the speculation, man. This is the time of year that I know I love it and I also hate it, because you just want to know, and you certainly don't want to get wrapped up in the completely obscure ones where you say, oh, listen, I'll take Jrue Holiday for you and I'll give you Torian Prince. It's a bloated contract for us. We'd love to send him your way. And listen, why don't you take DeAndre Jordan off the books for us too? It's just a bit of a bloated contract. So, I can't live in those.
Look at the Mavs fans who at one point someone threw out to me a trade of like Tim Hardaway and Maxi Kleba and was like, is that enough for Jrue Holiday? And the answer is no. And then the Mavs fans on Twitter were like, that's way too much to give up for Jrue Holiday.
Right. So, yeah, it's also about the balance of where perspectives are from fan bases and over. And by the way, that's something that I've had to walk through with overvaluing, the Caris LeVerts, the Spencer Dinwiddies of the world. You get attached to these guys and then you realize, relatively speaking, what their value is around the league. Yeah. So listen, we thank, of course, Jake Madison for coming in off of the Locked On Pelicans podcast. You can find it right here on the Locked On Network, doing his thing since the very early days, the founding Potter, as they are affectionately referred to. Really appreciate your time, Jake. I'm sure we will circle up during the year following a mega deal between the Pelicans and the Nets.
There we go. We'll have a crossover podcast at some point if a deal goes down, for sure, breaking it down from all angles. So it's going to be fun. Welcome to the network, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks a lot, man.